it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Run like a wild man.
I watch you struggle and I watch you wrestle with them angels.
Delirious. From Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jordan-Hare Stadium time is 8:22 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Your digital audio device is tuned into the Orange and True podcast, harbored by collegeofmagnolia.com. I'm Son of Crow, at Son of Crow 2 on Twitter, at Son of Crow on Venmo, Drew to my face. To one side of me, the rumor monger, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S is for see you later, Aggies.
So we're here to make fun of me like at Mississippi State this week?
That's okay. Probably going to happen. And the other side of me, not giving you full Fort Payne ASMR because Chief is a dad times two today, as of yesterday. So he's out, sitting in for Chief, from The Athletic, Justin Ferguson.
Howdy. How are y'all?
So this is like, I feel like we're on an NPR show. We have somebody sitting in for somebody.
It's like in Parks and Rec where they always would have the joke that so-and-so was sitting in for so-and-so.
My name is James. I'm sitting in for Catherine, who is in New York, sitting in for so-and-so. Yeah. On today's show, Auburn Soccer had a heck of a week. Had a win against Kentucky, which is a big, big, big win for the soccer program. It's a big SEC win, and also Kentucky's a really good program. 2-1, game winner by Haley Whitaker in the 104th minute, because they went to double OT, and then turned around and went to double OT again against Old Dominion and got the draw, 0-0, came out of there with 1 point.
What is double OT in college soccer? How does that work?
It's like basketball, in that it's two shortened versions of a half. However, it's unlike basketball in that it's golden goal, so first goal wins. So if you, or like the NFL, you play, someone scores first, they win. But if the half ends...
So there's no shootouts in college?
No.
Okay.
There's no PK shootout in college.
Soccer. Until you get to the postseason.
Yeah.
Man.
The PK shootout is beloved and hated all at the same time. There are people who love it. Most of those people don't watch a ton of soccer. People who watch a ton of soccer don't love it unless their team wins by a shootout. Then they love it.
It's the most exciting thing you're probably going to see as just a casual viewer.
Yeah.
It's something you flip the channel over to go see if it's a big match.
Yeah, but I always felt like FIFA should go back to the golden goal rule.
Me too.
Just like college soccer. Because, like, take for example, hockey. You know, I don't care anything about hockey during the regular season, but if I know a playoff game's in overtime, I'm going to turn it because the golden goal in that aspect.
Yes.
It's so thrilling. Every single moment it can be you know, even heightened. I love it.
I would love it if they made it the golden goal, and I wish that FIFA would go to the college soccer version of the clock, where the clock is kept in the press box and not
where same people keep a clock,
not by a guy on the field who doesn't have to tell anybody what the clock's doing, just him. That was actually something Karen Hoppe talked about in the interview I did with her, but she also likes the Sutton rules in college soccer, which I don't. So that's. Next week, Auburn is home versus Tennessee on Thursday, and they go to Oxford to play Ole Miss on Sunday. But both those games should be on SEC Network and SEC Network Plus. So, Ryan, you can watch both of those.
There we go. You're going to go out to that Thursday night game, Crow?
I will be in Breckenridge, Colorado on Thursday and Friday this week. Yeah, so I won't actually be in town for the football game either this weekend. It's going to be 40 degrees in Breckenridge, Colorado when I'm there.
It's going to be 94 here, probably, kickoff.
Yeah, all that cool weather we kind of had the last couple of days over the weekend, might be nice to tailgate. No, it's going to be back up to the upper 90s.
So I completely missed that because it was still blazing hot in College Station. No relief whatsoever.
It was about Friday morning, you got up, it's like, in this low 70s, it's 80 degrees for lunch.
No.
Guys, 80 degrees is not cold. Yeah,
no.
Today it was 80 this evening. I was like, oh, man, kind of chilly out here. Like, that is not a cold temperature. 80 degrees is warm.
It was today, the first day of fall, and it's still like 95 degrees outside. Yep.
It sounds right.
Yeah.
It does not smell like pumpkin spice. It still smells like body odor. It's too hot. Yeah, 40 degrees. I'm going to have to like figure out if my jacket still fit.
Because
I've had no need for them since.
You got to pull them out of storage since you moved.
Yeah, exactly. I got to figure out where they are. Yeah, and see if they still fit. So, you guys want to talk basketball?
Of course.
All right, on the show notes, it has basketball recruiting as our next topic, which...
Yeah, this is... So, normally we don't talk about recruiting too much, but this is a pretty big weekend from what I understand.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, so I was talking to Will, Dr. McLaughlin, our basketball expert on the site. We got some visitors. Cam Thomas is a maybe. I think he was supposed to be on the list. I don't know if he's for sure coming. Mm-hmm. Greg, I don't know if you know any more on that.
Oh, I don't follow basketball recruiting at all. But, I mean, I keep up with how much I need to know. Okay. But, yeah, so I leave it to the honestly, the people like Will to sort it out for me.
Yeah, so Cam Thomas, he's a shooting guard, five-star. And Jalen Green, another five-star. They're both going to be on campus for the Mississippi State game. So hopefully that game goes well. I mean, we missed on Walker Kessler today, the big five-star center. Supposed to be between Auburn and Duke, and then went up to Chapel Hill and committed to North Carolina this past weekend.
Yeah, UNC closed quick on him.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing.
Was he the Georgia guy?
He was the guy, yeah.
He ruled Georgia out pretty quick.
Georgia connections, and then he probably met their coach and decided wasn't a fan of that.
Tom Green is a sweaty-looking dude. He just looks like he might not ever stop sweating.
And the thing with Georgia is so interesting is because they've got – yeah, they've got a lottery pick, probably a top three, possibly top one pick in this next year. But Kessler wouldn't play with him, like so. It's like one of those things where you got to hit right, and hopefully that can roll into your next class, and that isn't quite going on right now at Georgia.
Yeah, but when you're Auburn, you got to feel good about being in recruiting battles with Duke and North Carolina.
Yeah, you don't want to lose them all, but you want to be able to say you're in it. It's pretty cool.
It used to be UAB and Vanderbilt.
We used to be taking kids from UT Martin,
right,
and being excited about it.
So,
or having transfers from Furman and being like ecstatic. Sharif Cooper, Mark Murphy, crystal ball. Sharif Cooper to Auburn, which I think, I mean, everyone. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't think he's coming to Auburn.
Yeah, he still hasn't made an official announcement, and I don't really know why.
It's like 3 weekends in a row someone has told me this is the weekend that he's going to commit. So
exactly.
I'm excited about that weekend.
Who knows when it'll happen? Maybe it'll be during signing period, but we'll see. I think he's kind of the reason we're getting some more of these five-star recruits that are interested in us. I think he either plays with or is friends with Jalen Green. I know that's kind of a reason Green started looking at us in the first place was because of Sharif.
Yeah, you got to get all those AAU connections. Are huge in basketball recruiting.
Well, it's like in these past couple teams, Auburn has had a ton of Atlanta kids.
The AOT team.
They all play on AOT. Yeah,
right. Good. And they're starting to diversify a little bit. But
AOT just happens to be Under Armour AAU team. It's just not like a coincidence.
Random coincidence.
It just happens. Yeah. Just. Kind of basketball recruiting, you know.
It's just, that's just
things
happenstance.
Happen. Mm-hmm.
Sharif Cooper, we talked about him. Cameron Thomas. Horace Spencer. Chief would love it if we mentioned that Horace Spencer's first basketball game for Atenas Cordoba in Argentina is this Thursday. So if you have, I don't know, man, like a way to pirate that feed, I don't know how else. It may not be on TV in Argentina. If it is, maybe it's on the internet. Maybe you can figure that out.
Maybe pay somebody to just go and live stream it from their phone. That might be the best you can
do. They're not very good at interacting. I've tweeted at Tennis Cordoba a couple times now looking for a Horace Spencer jersey, and they have not even responded or liked my tweets.
Wait, did you tweet them in Spanish?
English. Maybe next time I'll tweet them in Spanish.
I'm sure you guys probably talked about this, but I think it's a big deal that Horace is playing in Argentina.
Me too.
Because it's a probably your best league in the Western Hemisphere outside of the NBA, of course. And they've taken on to him pretty well from just what you can kind of pick up from their Twitter account and stuff like that. I think he's going to have a great career over there.
Yeah.
I really do. I think, and you can make good money playing basketball overseas. So even if you're not going to have a shot in the NBA or even in the G League, there's something to be said for, you know, keeping on doing that. And look, you were talking about earlier, Auburn didn't have a ton of those guys either for a while. I mean, it was Kenny Gabriel kind of carrying the torch, winning dunk contest in Turkey for a while. But now you're going to start getting the NBA guys, but just getting guys who are pros themselves and who will come back to Auburn and be an encouragement to some of those role players and maybe some of those bench guys that are like, you know, why Auburn? Well, you can still play professional basketball right. coming out here, even if you're not a star.
And life in Argentina is not half bad, making decent money and living down there. Like, I think you're absolutely right. That's probably, NBA one. The case could be said the G League is the second best professional league. And then Argentina and Brazil's got to be the next two. And like,
and the tennis is, I think, it's supposed to be the best team in that league.
Yeah, it's one of them.
One of the more prestigious teams, at least.
So he could parlay that from there to maybe playing in the Spanish league, Turkish league. He could end up overseas and have a long career. And I think, I mean, you saw, we talked about him last week. Simeon Bowers played in the Philippines for 6-7 years. Like, guys can play overseas if they can play. And Horace has the type of game that translates really well to the international game. He doesn't need the ball in his hands to be effective. And that's a big thing. So
what's the story with Bryce Brown then? Because we
I do not know.
Playing professionally yet?
Like, I don't know. He's not signed with anybody. You got to figure somebody needs somebody who can hit threes.
Yeah, I do wonder if he's kind of waiting to see if he might even land on a G League team somewhere since he had a summer league run. These G League teams are gonna have to fill out their rosters at some point with guys who aren't, you know, two ways or guys who are getting sent down by the main club. So. Maybe we'll come. I mean, I don't know. I admittedly don't know a ton about how that works, but maybe something in the G League draft, you might be able to keep an eye on him because I feel like that's kind of where he's going to end up being.
He's too good not to be playing professional basketball somewhere.
Yeah,
and he had a decent enough run in summer league.
Yeah,
he did when he got on the floor, he did pretty well. And you know, you need 3-and-D guys just to fill out a roster.
Sure.
At least. I mean, heck, he could be a 14th or a 15th guy on a lottery bound team towards the end of the season. I mean, you got to see how
play with the Lakers.
Yeah, you can see how, like, watch the Hawks sometime these last couple years at the end of the year. It's just dudes.
It's just guys.
Yeah, and so you know, maybe get a chance. It'd be cool to see if he got a chance, say, with the Hawks with their new team now in College Park. Being close to home, that would be great.
My dream is a College Park Hawks Bryce Brown jersey, and to go because we'd go see him. We'd probably see him play 5 games.
By the way, their new jerseys they came out with this week are
just—they're amazing,
awesome. they're really, really cool.
They are better than the Big Hawks.
Yes,
100% better than the Big Hawks
because they're not trying to make the neon green happen.
No,
they're just letting it be the red and black and yellow.
It's a I'm hoping for Bryce Brown in College Park, or I'm hoping for Bryce Brown, you know, in the Big Hawks for the Mavs. To be 100% honest, I like the Mavs. So that brings me another question. We've talked about this on the Slack a bunch. So Chuma is officially, according to Shams, redshirting for the Magic, which we had all speculated was going to be the case. The good news for Chuma is that means he gets slotted at next year's 16th pick money.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll actually end up making, like, I think, another $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
This year?
But I think they have to start paying him now.
Okay.
But,
yeah, he's going to sign a G League deal this year and treat him like a guy. You basically treat him like a guy who didn't go to college.
Right.
And you just put him on a G League contract for a year. And then in 2020, he will finally sign that deal. And it extends that window as well. It's a 4-year deal.
For a baseball comparison, they're not starting a service time yet.
Exactly.
Right. Magic getting for 5 years, but only have to pay him a 4-year contract.
And this year
it starts next year.
This year he gets to rehab. He gets to
no pressure for playing this year.
Get to learn. Get to build into the team and kind of what the Magic want to do.
My question is: does he, based on this contract, does that mean he is even able to play on the G League roster in the spring if he were to rehab? Like, does he get rehab assignments, or is he not eligible for that because they're stashing him?
Sounds like he would be eligible to play on the G League team, but not for the NBA team.
I think that would probably be the way to go.
So the real question, though, is he going to be in 2K at any point this year?
Man, I hope so, but I don't think so. This is the
case. He's already in the game.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he wasn't on the game out of the box, though.
Oh, he wasn't out of the box. They did a face. They did a full scan for him and everything, and put him into the game.
He wasn't out of the box because he had not signed a contract with the Magic. So I don't know if this is now going to change that or not.
I bet in a live roster they can have him and have him designated as.
We'll get a lot of Auburn fans buying
that in as a G League guy,
right? Because I think, I mean, the best thing for Chuma would be to have this year get some rehab assignments, and then, like you said, have 4 years. Starting next year at more money to play on a Magic team that quite possibly could be actually decent next year.
Anybody could be good in the East.
And the and the Magic's G League team's in Lakeland, so it's not like you're having to go a distance. Like, it's not like those guys who have to like play in like Reno.
There's a lot of Auburn fans in Orlando.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So that's a good thing for him. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who would buy a Chuma Okeke Orlando Magic T-shirt jersey, or for would sure. love it if the Magic would send them one for free that hosts this podcast. We are going to take a quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so we're back, and we have a couple questions to ask our special guest.
We got a special guest here. Let's go.
I don't know how special this is.
So special, Justin. You're our first guest.
All right.
Actually, not our first. You're our first in-person guest we've ever
first
had.
First non-staff guest.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
A non-SB Nation guest.
There we go.
All right, so what was your first game you attended as a kid? The first Auburn game?
So, I don't remember, I don't remember if I had gone to ones before, because I grew up in a bunch of different places, but from the time I was 3 to the time I was 5, I lived here. So I probably went to a game around then, but I do remember after we had moved away when I was about 6 or 7, we came to a game when Auburn played Vanderbilt and beat the tar out of them. And I remember that's my first vivid memory of going to a game. It was an 11 o'clock game. It was blazing hot, and Auburn just whipped Vanderbilt.
JP game,
yeah, I mean, definitely a JP game, and just whipped them. And it was fun because at that point you're like, oh, your team wins, and you're a kid, and you're thinking, well, yeah, Auburn. Like that was my first memory. It's like, yeah, Auburn just dominated them. That's Auburn football. And it's like, yeah, well, hold on, kid. You got a little ways to go.
I'm waiting for tomorrow once this episode drops for either James to tweet about exactly which game you're talking about.
Yeah,
where he was during that game.
I probably should have looked it up and found it. But yeah. It was a Vanderbilt game. It was the first one I have a vivid memory of.
It's probably the 03 Vanderbilt game. So I was gonna say. I think that actually was in Nashville. Who is your first favorite Auburn football player or basketball player? I'm guessing.
Well, okay, so that's a funny thing because I have more memories of the 99 basketball team than I do of any football team around. So I was born in 93. So late 90s, I have very little to no memory of Auburn football, which is probably a good thing. But Auburn basketball, that 99 team, and I was a huge, huge fan of – My brother's about a year younger than me. He was a huge Chris Porter fan, of course. Everybody loved Chris Porter. And so I thought it would be different. You can't have the same favorite player. I was a huge Mamadou Ndiaye fan.
Yes.
Huge Mamadou Ndiaye fan. And then, so you said Mamadou and then Doc Robinson. Loved Doc Robinson, of course. But that whole team was my first one. I guess for football, a little bit after that, I guess the first player I remember really, really liking a ton was Rudy Johnson. And, he's only there for a year, but, I just remember him just – crushing it the year he was at Auburn. And then one of the most underrated plays and calls in Auburn history, even though they shouldn't have been in that situation, was his touchdown run against Wyoming.
Right.
Where he broke what felt like 35 tackles on the play and scored. Mike Tirico had a great call.
That's a great game.
I would say Rudy was probably my first one.
We used to do home and homes with Wyoming.
Is that it like the Pat Dye? Yeah, it was like the Pat Dye. Thank you, Pat Dye.
Yeah.
Game. It's like why you always schedule Sanford.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah. So Chief is going to love the fact that you mentioned Mamadou Ndiaye. I believe that's Chief's favorite all-time Auburn play.
He was so
up there with Horace. Either him or Horace.
Because we were in Minneapolis, it was when Mamadou came into the hotel bar, it was pretty fun to be with Chief. Speaking of Chief, again, before we ask for our next question, again, congratulations to Chief.
Mm.
A little Chief version 2, born on Sunday.
So, for people who are listening who might have read it, I did the story last week on the West Virginia game, the Rand game, the 10th anniversary, and Chief was one of the guys I talked to for the story. He called me right after they had some doctor's visit right before. I had no idea they were this close, and I'm like, dude, at this point,
yeah.
I was like, dude, you were that close being a dad, and you're wasting your time talking to me about a football game, and he. loved it.
Like, second kid.
Yeah. He's already been through the ringer once.
Right.
So, yeah.
No, that was a great story. And I
appreciate it.
My favorite thing about that story was it reminded me of, I mean, that was one of those games that should not have been that big of a deal.
No.
It was two unranked teams. It was 09, so it was kind of the season at Auburn that really was just the most happy to be here
mm-hmm.
season ever. We were just happy it wasn't miserable. And then, but that game kind of exemplified, in a lot of ways, the new, how fun Auburn football could be.
Yeah.
As far as we thought.
And also the optimism, I think the pre-2010, pre-2013 optimism of Auburn football, you don't get the same amount.
Right.
Because Alabama hadn't quite become the superpower that they are yet. And so I think there's a good part of the Auburn fan base is still always going to be a little bit, or a lot of bit in some cases, disappointed if they're not going to Atlanta, you know, most of the time. Back then it was just, you could get really, really fired up for a
sure.
game against, you know, an unranked West Virginia team at the time. And, of course, the rain made it all. But that,
and it was sold out.
It was sold out, and as Jack pointed out to me when I talked to him for the story, it was probably over capacity because people snuck in after the rain. It was a crazy game, and, like, that's the thing. Is like, when I wrote the story, it was, like, 10 years from, it was 10-year anniversary. I've been waiting on it for a while, but I had people that I work with talk to me. It's like, I don't remember anything about this game. But this was, you know, this was a really cool story. And I was like, yeah, this was very much, growing up an Auburn fan, this was very much a, I know Auburn fans are going to love this story and remember this game. And so that's what I was trying to kind of shoot for there. But when you have it as people comparing it to crowd noise of the kick six, the prayer, you know, the miracle of Jordan Hare, or, you know, Trey Smith flipping into the end zone, it's like, you hard to believe that was a mid-September game between two unranked teams.
With one of them had Noel Devine. The greatest YouTube running back in the history of football,
who had absolutely destroyed Auburn for five straight quarters at that point,
smoked them in that game too.
Early version of Trevion Williams,
Ryan, you gotta watch some Noel Devine highlight videos on YouTube at some point. You're gonna feel like he must have been playing like eighth grade football as a senior in high school. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, the only thing,
except for he still looked like an idiot.
Yeah, he was still the same size as everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the, I think the only other highlight tape I remember seeing that was close to that was Derrick Henry's at, you know, when, because he was playing, you know, 3A football in Florida, and he looked like a man running against a bunch of children. Noah Devine was that kind of in the opposite. It was just like, oh, y'all have no, there's no chance of catching him.
Yeah.
Ryan
did send me the greatest, one of the best I've seen this year, and that was the Montrevious
Adams. Yeah. Playing 1A football in Georgia.
1A
just destroyed
it. A bunch of 165-pound centers.
Tell you a quick story about Mon Adams about it real quick. I did a story where I went to his hometown in Georgia his senior year. And so I was at SEC Country at the time. That would have been 16 or 17. It was 16. And I remember went to his high school, tiny little 1A high school. And I was talking to his high school coach about just – what was it like? Because Mom was a top 10 recruit coming out of high school at that little place, and he was telling me that it was wild seeing these private jets land at the little airstrip there in Vienna, and it was just like the Dabo Sweeney, Nick Saban, like just had led, just would come there all the time, and it was like, they had no way to handle all the attention around him, and it was a miracle he got. It was a miracle, honestly, I think. Mon was the way he was in college. I think it was part of just the way he was raised. But also, he got so much attention for a kid that was so crazy. Because it's like, it would be like, for people around here, it would be like if one of the top 10 players in the country was playing at Lochipoca.
Right.
Like, it would be exactly a real town. Like, it would be, it felt like that exactly.
This tiny place. Yeah, man. Like
everybody there works at a chicken plant, including his mom and his sisters. And like, yeah, it's if it wasn't kind of off the interstate, there'd be no way that people would ever get there.
It's amazing. His highlight video is so funny because you're like, well, not, like, in basketball, a guy could play at a 1A high school, but his AAU team is still playing against the best teams in the country.
Yeah,
the only time Mon Adams played football was against 165-pound centers. In 1A, like he didn't get to go play in some summer league because he didn't play receiver. He wasn't playing 7-on-7. He's playing defensive tackle.
Yeah, he had to go to like rivals and 24/7 camps.
Yeah,
and dominate. And those guys get looked at even tougher because it's like you really have to show a ton, because they'll look at you and say, okay, well, you just beat up this, you know, this 190-pound white kid at offensive tackle. Like, that ain't gonna cut it if you're gonna try to play in the SEC. But lo and behold, he did it, and he was really good for 4 years.
And it's not like he had to come in and redshirt. Like, he was a significant member of that 2013
defense. Played line. Right away. Played I love right that. Him and Carl Lawson.
Yeah. Was he the first of the number ones on the defensive line? And then we've kind of kept it. I think we've had a number one playing D-line since him.
Yeah, I don't remember definitely one.
Yeah, definitely been one since him, but I don't know if there's one before.
Yeah,
single-digit defense alignment are the best. Like, yeah, I agree. Like, you know that you got...
Did Clowney start that?
Tennessee used to always have one.
Okay.
And Clemson had a run, like, before Clemson's big run, but... I want to say maybe Gaines Adams was like 350 pounds and wore like number 9 on the defensive line. So
I used to always like single digit linebackers and single digit defensive linemen. I used to like, okay, those dudes, you got to be good. It's kind of like what was his name? Richard Johnson's article about the visor.
Mm-hmm.
The visor didn't make you good. You wore a dark visor because you were good. Because if you wore one and you weren't good, you were getting made fun of until you took it off.
And that reminded me of how great Ronnie Brown's orange visor was.
Ronnie Brown's orange visor, no gloves.
Yeah. Just the fiercest look.
That was it. All right. What is the best thing you've eaten on the road, covering a road game?
This season or period?
Period.
Oh, period.
Unless you want to do this season.
I'll do this season because it's easier to narrow down. It was just the place I was in last week. We flew into Houston, and we went to a place in Tomball, north of Houston. It's this place that opened as a chocolate place, like a chocolate shop. And they were doing it. They were making good money, and they were like, okay, we need to drum up the crowd a little bit more, so let's sell food. They decided to, you're in Texas, they cook brisket. They find a guy who it was time for him to kind of be his own pit master. They start selling brisket there, and the first year they were open, they were number 7 on Texas Monthly's list of best places in Texas, like right off the bat.
What's more competitive, brisket cooking or high school football in Texas?
That is a tough one. I will say, in both instances, I know people that will drive across the state to watch a high school football game or go to a particular barbecue restaurant. They go, oh, I heard such and such, and wherever's good.
Yeah.
I'm driving down to Uvalde this weekend to go watch so-and-so play. He's a good running back. I heard he's going to go to the Horns. Like, I know people that will drive across the state to go watch a good high school game or to go to a good barbecue place.
So you go to this place, and you get you some brisket, and you get you a couple of chocolate truffles on the way out the door. It was hilarious... And it's the best smelling restaurant I've ever been to.
Yeah.
You get the smokiness and all that of like a regular barbecue place, and then it smells like chocolate in there as well. And then they combine it. They do a mole sauce that you can put on there that is divine. This wasn't your question, but to go off of that a little bit, maybe the most surprising thing people may hear, and I've said this a couple times in the past, my favorite restaurant in the SEC is in Starkville.
Oh, no.
Ryan's going to love this. It's not Little Dewey's. Little Dewey's is good. Patty's is also very good in Starkville. It's a place in downtown Starkville called Restaurant Tyler. It is one of those like modern southern kind of places. You know, there's a couple of them like that in Auburn, but just off your head kind of good stuff.
Wow.
It is amazing. Probably the best place I've ever been to. They do like cold smoked grilled pork chops that are like the size of a dictionary.
That's amazing.
And then they did a Bananas Foster pudding that was probably my favorite dessert I've had in a long time. So, Vegas.
Ryan's not even a closeted Mississippi State fan. He just is a Mississippi State fan.
Yeah, I've got family, man.
And
I understand.
He always is trying to explain to us why Mississippi State and Starkville are both really good.
Starkville is underrated, I think, in terms of food. You're not going to have much to do there. But if you like to eat, it's pretty good. I will say this. Every time I go to Starkville, I have a list from relatives to buy as much cheese as I can fit in the rental car on the way back for Christmas gifts. So I do that.
That's
pretty
hilarious.
Last year I bought 15 pounds of cheese before the Mississippi State game and put it in my rental car and drove it back to Auburn.
My wife and I once were, this is going to sound like the weirdest story. My wife and I were on a bicycle tour of Austria once.
Yeah, we're already off to a great start.
And
as one does.
We stopped at a monastery, as you do, to buy beer and cheese. My daughter was not born yet, who is now currently losing her mind. Right under the microphone.
Cheese.
We buy cheese at this monastery that's known for its beer and cheese. and we put both in the pannier that's loaded on the back of our bike, which is a bag that attaches to the rear rack of your bike. And we're driving around, and every couple of days, we are like deep cleaning our cycling clothes because they just stink. Even the clothes we're pulling out of the bags just stink. And we're like, God, what? Like 3 days later, we're like, why do all of our clothes smell like feet? And we're like, literally washed all of our clothes every day, thinking that we're just sweating that much, yeah. Whatever. Turns out we'd forgotten like half of the cheese.
Oh no.
It's just in the bottom of the bag. Getting hot. Put our sweaty clothes on top of it. Yeah. So we didn't eat that cheese.
Yeah, you were making like a science project.
Yeah, making a new kind of cheese.
Yikes.
So Chief wrote in, and he wanted to know what your Wingstop order is. And which order?
We actually talked about it a little bit when I talked to him for the story. I am a fan of the Louisiana rub, which is that dry rub that's kind of like, it's Cajun spices, but it's kind of buttery as well. And I'm also a big fan of the Korean Q flavor. So I get a half and half of that. Always bone in. I don't like boneless wings.
Me neither.
Nuggets.
Yeah, basically. Nuggets. Now the rest of the people in my family love them, and that's why I'm like the only one who eats bone in ones. So I get that. So that's my bag. Well, yeah, we bonded pretty quickly over Wingstop when we started talking. In fact, I think he had just gone to Wingstop when I called him for that story.
If he goes,
he was in Columbus.
Here,
he was going to Columbus.
Columbus. Yeah, the Wingstop's pretty close.
Shout out to the Wingstop in Valley too. That place is popping.
he doesn't understand why we don't have Wingstop in Auburn. We have so many wing places.
But if Wingstop came in, it would dominate.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not here.
Although
I do like Wingtown.
Wingtown is good. Don't sleep on Wingtown whatsoever.
Get voodoo too. Out in college.
I like Wingtown. Mm-hmm. I like Wingtown. You know who else likes Wingtown is Los Poca High School kids.
Yeah.
You can learn a lot about Poca High at Wingtown. I actually was there one time and a guy was coming in. He had skipped school. And he was coming in to get wings to take back to the cafeteria and eat with his friends. That is brave.
That is a boss move. I wish I could have done that in high school. Where I went to high school, there was like nothing like that. I was middle of nowhere, and the only town I think in the world that has lost a McDonald's, a Taco Bell, and a Dairy Queen.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Well, if you lose a Dairy Queen in Texas, you lose your
state. I was talking to Justin Lee about that when I was driving around in Texas, and we were talking. He was in Texas for a very long time. The guy at the OA News.
He was in Odessa for several.
Loved it, but we were talking about Dairy Queen, and he's like, you know, Dairy Queen in Texas is a different ball game.
You get steak finger basket.
I know.
We would literally have a coach that if we won a basketball game by a certain number of points, he would take us to Dairy Queen after the game, and we would get steak finger basket. He'd buy everybody steak finger baskets. And so, like, we'd be at halftime sometimes at games, and the seniors would be yelling, like, do it for the steak finger basket! Like, screaming.
It's amazing.
Like, that was the motivating factor was getting that steak finger basket.
I love it.
All right, let's talk about speaking of Texas, let's talk about
A&M
football.
All right.
Nothing better than when the Aggies lose, except when the Aggies lose to the Auburn Tigers. So, it was a pretty good game from Auburn's standpoint. I cannot imagine a better first quarter from the Auburn point of view.
In the game, really, I know I'm getting ahead of myself. People might have felt nervy in that fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Being on the field there for that little comeback effort from A&M, Auburn's sideline was just cool as could be. Like, they knew they had this one taken care of. They just needed, really, one more first down.
Right.
And they were fine. And, excellent start from Auburn. That made the difference in the game. Also, being able to establish the run. Mm-hmm. And A&M not being able to do anything on the ground.
This felt like the game from last year, but flipped, and the comeback didn't happen.
And I will also say this, and I don't know how brave or not brave this is for this podcast, but that was probably Gus Malzahn's best game since maybe 13 or 14.
Well, that's what
of coaching.
Nerd said that in the thread.
Out-coached Jimbo Fisher by a mile.
The script was perfect. I mean, you score two touchdowns in your first two drives. You know, they figure out what you're doing in the second quarter. You go into halftime. You get the adjustments right, which I think is what a lot of people have criticized Gus for in the past, is they're just doing the same thing over and over, and it's not working.
All four games this year, you can point to tangible offensive adjustments. And I think that's part of Gus evolving as a coach, but I also think that's Kenny Dillingham's effect. Having an offensive coordinator up top, which Gus hasn't always had.
Right, he's been that isn't great about calling plays. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's up there, and look, that's what Kenny Dillingham came over for, and he was really good at that in Memphis. It's one of the things Mike Norvell talked very highly about him, that particular aspect of his coaching. So I think that's gone a long way. I mean, I know people look at Dillingham and his hire as maybe, or was it just a cost cutting measure?
Right.
Probably, but he was also exactly what Gus and Auburn needed right now, and through four games, it's really shown.
I think the coolest thing about that game is that Gus kind of went back. There were talks about from people that maybe played for Gus in 13 and 14 and 17 even. That there would be times where Gus would see something on the field, and no matter where Auburn was on the field, he would just radio in, like, we're about to score a touchdown, run this play. And you kind of get that feeling again, like, wait a minute.
It's exactly what happened with the Shorts play. They were waiting to get to the right hash. They were waiting to run it into the they were going to run it into the boundary side. And they knew that if the play was sold enough, well enough, and what A&M, real quick, A&M's defense. Very good. Mike Elko's a great defensive coordinator. Very aggressive. They were really committed to stopping the run and sometimes over-committing too much. So what they did was when they would see Auburn's guards pull on a buck sweep or even on a power, they're like beeline into that side of the field.
Well, that was the focus in your film room a couple weeks or last week or the week before of Auburn's having all the success pulling guards going to the right, and maybe they should keep doing that. And the A&M saw the same thing. Said, we're going to cut that off and
we're going to
counter
out.
It perfect.
And then you counter it with Schwartz. And look, Bo Nix made a good little crackback block there. Prince Tega tried his hardest to go upfield. And then I thought Salcanella made a really good block on there. Didn't need it, though. Anthony Schwartz is that fast. And good to see, I think, from the Auburn perspective, good to see Schwartz remind everybody that, he is the fastest man in college football. And Gus said that was proof that as he gets healthier, they got to find ways to get him the ball even more.
Absolutely. Is there any player that has been more impressive? Sal Canella, to me, is a player that I had zero expectations for coming into this year. And he has not been a negative impact on the team. So to me, that's a huge win.
Saw several plays on Saturday where his blocking was, it might not have been a key block, but it was enough that they were going to get a few more yards because of what he was doing. And I don't think I would have expected coming into the season that Sal Canella was going to be a guy who could make an impact without having the ball in his hands.
He has the second most snaps on offense behind Bo Nix.
Yeah. And part of that is because Seth hasn't been, Seth missed.
Right. He's pretty much been the only
six quarters.
He's been healthy the whole season.
Right.
Yeah. But he's playing hard, and it's a role that is not glamorous, but he's playing it well.
Speaking of the receivers, one of the guys we've seen on the field a lot, he hasn't really gotten the ball, but he stood out because he's not a scholarship guy, James Owens Moss.
Mm-hmm.
What's his role? Like, why we didn't see him in the spring? Nobody expected him to be getting these snaps early in the game. So what's caused that?
James Owens Moss is Shedrick Jackson right now.
Okay.
If Shedrick Jackson was healthy, he'd be out there doing what James Owens Moss is doing. Going in motion, land blocks, maybe every now and then catching a pass. But that's the one thing about having a walk-on like mm-hmm. Moss. Dude's going to bust his tail, and you know that any opportunity he's going to get, he's going to try his hardest. And you need that. Sometimes blocking like that, if you're a receiver, is just effort. And so when you don't have Shedrick Jackson, your best perimeter blocker, they're putting him into the game and using him very well. And I think Auburn's other receivers are raising their games in perimeter blocking. We mentioned Canella. I thought for a guy who had a hurt shoulder, Seth Williams threw some good blocks in there. Let's say
Bill's playing really well in blocking them.
As long as he lines up correctly. Yeah.
As long as he lines up correctly. And also special teams. He won the special teams helmet sticker again. There was a punt, and I know y'all probably couldn't see it on TV, but there was a punt where he was physically beating his man for like 30 yards, just dogging him up the field and blocking him. And the guy, you could just tell by the end of the A&M guy was just like laying on the ground, like, please stop. I'm done. And that's the thing about the Hill, man. Like, he's a really, really good player, really good kid. But that example of Gus flipping out on him in that red zone possession is kind of what's held him back, is that he's got to – He's got to do the little things right.
And he's still a redshirt freshman. I mean, yeah. He's got plenty of years left at all.
He's got to know where he's got a line. You can't have opportunities like that go by the wayside because it's easy for Gus to be like, I'll trust somebody else in that spot.
Yeah, he'll definitely dog out.
But I think he will be a really good player down the road for sure.
One of the things that surprised me, not even during this game, but after the game, because it was that I didn't have to think about the offensive line in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed because after the game, like, man, I don't remember complaining about the offensive line. That's a win.
Yeah, there were a few busts. There were a few just, you didn't really get much push there.
Happens
in every game. And also, A&M's got a really good defensive front. They're the eighth best in the country last year at stopping the run. They're really good, even though they had to change up some things this year with their personnel. I thought they played well. I only saw a couple of opportunities where you were like, oh, that was bad. Guys were pulling well. You saw some guys even get into the second level a little bit more in zone blocking. They held their own. They had to be schemed around a little bit with all those outside runs early. Right. But when it came down to it and A&M started playing a little bit more spread out and gap sound, it was just, all right, can you out-muscle these dudes? Do they want it anymore? And on that fourth quarter drive.
Over six-minute drive, 12 plays, 8 times Booby gets the ball.
And constantly changing what they did too.
Right? Yeah.
There were tosses, there were zones, there were powers. Like and it was
and he was fresh.
Because a healthy dose of a fresh Jartavius Whitlow.
Yeah.
But like you said, in different ways. It wasn't the Gus power. It was let's toss it up.
All three of their tosses went for at least 5 or 6 yards. Like they were the exact right calls to call in that situation because once they started cheating towards the middle, you hit them to the outside. And once they play sound again, well, it's easier to go up the middle. Gus's play calling and the way Auburn played, they kept A&M off balance most of the game, and that's what you do when your offensive line and your running game might not be where it needs to be right now. You got to out scheme them, and they did that.
And Ryan has in our show notes after A&M hits their field goal at the beginning of the second quarter. A&M had 7 straight punts.
Well, no, not just A&M. It was
Auburn.
The combined game was 7 straight punts to the end of the half. So the second quarter was you could just fast forward.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
And people say, well, what went wrong in the second quarter for Auburn? Well, they had set the edge so well in the first quarter. A&M started playing it a little bit better. Mistakes. I mean, just little mistakes. Guys getting beat on the outside. Fumbles. Fumble snaps. Penalties.
Yeah.
Things that keep you behind the chain. Things that make you say. Like after the game, Auburn's undefeated. Auburn's shown glimpses on offense. They could be a whole lot better. If they just play cleaner football, they could be a whole lot better.
Well, the other issue of what happened to Auburn in the second quarter was Braden Mann. Best punter in the country.
Yeah.
Pinned Auburn deep several times. He had a couple that he kicked into the end zone.
And a couple that tut?
Yeah.
About to.
Yeah. Kick it. You can't outkick your coverage.
Yeah.
And Tut's had a great season.
He's going to bust one. It's going to be so great when he finally does.
But both in defense and special teams. He's a really good football player.
He had a rundown. I think Kellen Mond thought that he was a defensive lineman because he blitzed. Tut blitzed on a third down. And Kellen Mond ran outside. Tut changed direction and just ran him down. And you would think that if Kellen Mond knew that it was a defensive back, he would have thrown it away. But I, for the life of me, watching the game live, I go, I think he doesn't think that that's a defensive back. Because he wasn't even looking at him.
I've said this before on the lunch break, and I don't know. I haven't had anybody really counter with a better example. I think this might be the fastest team on both sides of the ball Auburn's ever put out.
I wouldn't disagree with you at all.
Those linebackers, especially, did upgrade. I'm sure everyone wants to sing the praises of Deshaun Davis and Darrell Williams and Trey Williams and Montavious Atkinson for what they did in Auburn.
Sure.
The upgrades in terms of athleticism with the new core is just bonkers.
Chandler Wooten, Owen Papo can fly.
Absolutely. Jacoby McClain will run as hard as he can because he knows at the end of it he might be able to knock your teeth out.
Right.
And then, of course, KJ Britt is playing very – he looks like an NFL linebacker.
KJ Britt's playing the best linebacker. Is there somebody in the SEC playing better linebacker than KJ Britt? Right?
Probably not now. Probably not at the moment. I mean, to be honest.
Through four games.
He is playing really good football. And then you have your safeties that are not afraid to come down and get physical in coverage. Tackling in space has been excellent. I feel like Javaris Davis didn't have the greatest first 3 games of the year, but he played really well on Saturday, and he had some of those what I call submarine tackles where they get in space and it's just you're done. You're not going any further. And You can't nickel and dime those guys. They're too fast.
It seemed like the game plan in the secondary was, okay, we know that they're bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
We know that if we let them get behind us, they're going to catch every jump ball there is.
Yep.
So we got to keep them in front. We got to tackle. And they did a great job of that. And that's why when you saw Auburn kind of march down and have that six-minute touchdown in the fourth quarter, you knew, hey, the secondary is not going to give up any big plays. They're already out of time.
It
seemed to work great.
The only thing I think, and you talk about different ways Auburn can be a whole lot better, there's a ton on offense. Defensively, I think one of the things that might be a little bit troublesome for Auburn is that their defensive backs are a little small, especially the guys at corner. Bigger receivers are going to win those intermediate balls. Auburn's not going to let you beat them deep. They're too fast. They're not going to let you play short. They're too good at tackling at space right now. And A&M did it. That's how A&M walked down the field on those two touchdown drives. It's those intermediate balls, those 17, 18-yard plays where good quarterbacks can get it to them, big receivers can get it to them. Alabama and LSU look like two teams are going to be able to do that.
Right.
And so that's where they've got to improve. And good news is you don't play them for another month.
What you have to do if you allow that is you have to tackle them if they catch the ball at 15 to 20 yards.
Right.
And that's what they did well.
Yes, they did that.
There were no, if you watched the Houston Tulane game Friday night or Thursday night, whatever it was.
I did watch that game, Ryan.
That game was lost because nobody tackled on a ball down the field.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Auburn was doing that, and that's going to help them win.
You know who can't improve very much is, well, maybe Ryan, noted Derek Brown hater. Derek Brown had 4 tackles, 3 for a loss, 2 sacks, a forced fumble, and 2 pass breakups.
Should have been corner of the week.
First defensive player for Auburn to do that since 2012.
That is amazing.
To do all that in a game. Yeah.
Who did it in 2012?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Siri's trying to figure it out.
Jake, I think we've determined it might have been Gabe Wright.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure on that one. But yeah, he played like a dominant player. And can I get on a soapbox real quick?
Go for it.
Real quick. There's a lot of people talking about Nick Coe right now. Nick Coe is messing some people up, just not getting the stats for it.
Right.
He's hitting quarterbacks. He is, you know, making a lot of chaos by the line. Now, should he be having more sacks and tackles for loss and tackles in general? Absolutely. But he's affecting the game right now, and they're moving him around doing some things. I think he can catch fire, but this defensive line's so good.
Yeah.
You're going to have – I think this is the place where once a week it's going to be somebody else. It's been Marlon to start. It was Derek this week. Tyron Truesdale's going to get in on the action at some point. There's going to be a Tyron Truesdale game. There's going to be a Big Cat Bryant game. Yeah. And I think by the end of the season, you'll have at least one Nick Coe game.
It seems like Nick Coe so far is having Marlon's season from last year.
Yes.
Where he's so close. I mean, he is making plays, but he's not getting the stats for those plays.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, in your film room today,
you
talked about how Auburn ran a lot of 20 personnel. The first half switched to 10 in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, what is 20 personnel and what is 10 personnel?
20 means you have 2 running backs, running back, H-back, however you want to combine those. 10 is just 1, 4 wide.
And no tight ends.
Yep. That's where the 0 comes in there.
Why did Gus do that?
Okay, so I think it was all a part of spreading a team out. And in the first half, they attacked the edges, and then A&M got better at establishing that. And so what you do in that case is, all right, how are we going to generate an inside running game? Because you need to have it in the second half, and they did. What they did is that if you put an H-back on the field or a tight end, it invites one more guy to come into the box. So what you do on a 4 when you go into 10 personnel, it's spread football. It is your 5 linemen against whoever they got in front of them. You got to beat them with a running game. So it spreads the defense out. It makes them have to respect all the receivers, and it's easier to run into because as good as you would like to have an H-back or a tight end there, it just brings more clutter to a team that was already really fundamentally sound and gap sound on defense. They run the ball in 10 personnel super well on that fourth quarter drive that we were talking about earlier. Did a really good job. And the other thing I thought worked is if you go back and watch the game, they ran a lot of that where Booby started the play on outside at wide receiver. And all that does is, it's window dressing. All it is just you read it, you motion him, and when you motion him, you can see this is what they're playing. They're playing zone, they're playing man, here's what they're going to do, how they're going to respect us in the box. It lets Nick's kind of see it. It lets Gus kind of see it a little bit quicker. And it worked. And so you spread them out to knock them down. That's basically what they did in the second half.
Is there ever a wrinkle off of that where you talked about where Booby starts outside, so it looks like you have 5 wide? Do they ever run plays out of that without motioning them in?
It depends on what the defense does. If the defense is respecting them out there.
Is there a read where they say, okay, if they don't cover
Boone, if you don't cover them, yeah. Just and you not the same situation, but you saw that in the Oregon game, the Eli Stove touchdown. Mm. They're it was like, wait, hold on, there's not a guy back there. They have full range to say, clap, give me the ball, I gotta get it to that guy. So yeah, they're gonna wait for it. There might be a time when you run it enough where they'll sag off a little bit, or that linebacker who's responsible for Booby will cheat in a little. And so what you do on there is you just snap and let him go straight and just lob it to where he ain't. So right now, a team like A&M, a lot of those teams are going to respect it, and you bring them into the box. Kind of like they do sometimes with the H-back as well. You'll see them motion in from slot to in there just to make a read.
I thought it's interesting, and I've noticed it more this year. I don't know if he's done it in the past or not. But doing what you're talking about, where they bring somebody in, whether it's an H-back or a receiver, mm-hmm. but where they bring the receiver in, though. Where Eli Stove, Sal Canellis had a catch out of that, where they bring them in as an H-back and still treat them as a receiver.
They did that a little bit towards the end of the season last year with Ryan Davis. It's what they call kind of a now screen, where you run the RPO and let him leak out, and it's the read is the end, and then whatever the linebacker's doing. And then, they do that more often. The good thing, and what the next evolution of that is trusting guys like J.J. Wilson and John Samuel Shanker to be a guy where if you put them out at slot receiver, they'll respect them enough to know they'll go out for a pass if you let them hang there, but also can do some of that H-back stuff as well. And then when they make the play happen, they can go no huddle on the next play and not have substitute and just say, all right, now you're actually an H-back. Now you're actually a tight end. That's what they've been trying to push for a while. And I think it's part of the reason why you see this offense at least going faster.
All right. So last thing we're going to say, I've just been handed a note. Brendan Mann is the best player on their team, as Ryan told Chief.
I did. And Chief confirmed that to me. It was nice.
Okay. So is Joey Gatewood threw a touchdown pass? So he's starting quarterback now, right?
A lot of people want
that. He came out on the next possession as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Quarterback rating of 430, I think, in that game. Gosh, he's crushing it. So, I mean, if you want efficiency.
My favorite thing about that was after the game, I watched the recap, the Auburn Tiger, whatever, post-game show.
Mm-hmm.
And Gus said, Joey could be the starting quarterback. Or said, he obviously misspoke. But he said, we've got another guy who could be our starting quarterback. And I was like, Joey, why did you say that, Gus?
And he was saying that, and I think it was partly in reference to one of the questions, and he was like, because you're a play away.
Right.
You could be our starting quarterback. And it's not like, hey, you could be our starting quarterback. Look, Bo Nix has got to get better at throwing the ball. I mean, his on-target percentage is one of the worst in the FBS for quarterbacks.
Right.
He knows that. And he's a guy who's good. He's a guy who's really hard on himself, and he'll work at it. He'll get better at it the more he's actually got healthy receivers. He's barely played with Anthony Schwartz. Remember, he wasn't there in the spring. And he was hurt for a lot of fall camp. So he's still trying to learn just how far you have to throw it to Anthony Schwartz and how much. Because, man, if I'm throwing Anthony Schwartz, and I can't throw, but if I'm throwing Anthony Schwartz, I'm throwing as far as humanly possible. Right. And being like, well, that's not realistic because you can only go so far when you're actually a trained quarterback. But I think the one thing about Nix, though, is he does all the little things for a freshman quarterback so well. It's just that one big thing he's got to tighten up on. And when that comes, all the little things get amplified, and he can be really good.
What makes you feel good about watching him is you can tell, even when he misses the throw, like you said, he's the process is correct.
Yeah.
He's making the reads that he's supposed to. He's stepping up in the pocket like he should. Sometimes the footwork gets a little sloppy, but he's tucking the ball and running when he should, and he's not doing it when he shouldn't.
Throwing it away.
Right. He's not turning the ball over. That's huge.
14 straight quarters without a turnover after having two picks in his first half of his college career.
Mm.
There's not very many quarterbacks that are doing that right now.
He's not really taking sacks. He took one yesterday or Saturday.
Yeah, and it was a kind of a combination of a coverage sack and a bust up front.
Right.
So we ran a lot of different kinds of plays and zone plays versus gap run plays and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see us doing that again going forward? Like just
got to be a mix.
Mixing it up?
You got to be a mix, and you got to mix it up on certain drives. You can't just do one thing over and over again. Because now what you can do is you tweak. Once you're really good at pulling your guards, they're going to do what A&M did and be like, they'll overplay. And then Gus, to his credit, is very good at coming up with these little tweaks that'll the reverse to Schwartz, even the touchdown pass from Joey, that was supposed to be a kind of naked bootleg, and then you just read what it is on the other side. There's just tweaks because you got to be able to do that. You got to be able to keep a team off balance. If you're predictable to the people in the stands,
yeah,
you're definitely predictable for the guys making millions of dollars to defend you.
There were times in 17 and 18 that I kind of knew what play was going to come next with Gus.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Right, you knew that in 13 too, but it didn't matter because your personnel was just better than everybody else.
I knew it was going to happen.
You were running behind Greg Robinson.
They were in zone read.
You're running behind Greg Robinson, Alex Kozan, and Sean Coleman had a great year that year, but also Jay Prosh.
Yeah.
If you could clone Jay Prosh and Gus could have a Jay Prosh every year.
Oh, my gosh.
His offensive would be.
Chandler Cox wasn't that far off of that.
I love
him. He wasn't the blocker.
Wasn't as consistent as Prosh was, but was a little
bit
more
versatile. But by the end of his career, he was exactly what Gus wanted.
Remember, on this, fans of this podcast, including our friend Matt, at Barnow, at AU Barnow. Shout out to Matt.
There you go.
Fans of this podcast, remember me saying that Auburn will miss Chandler Cox more than we'll miss Jarrett Stidham this year. Because I think he'll be more difficult to replace. And I think we've done a pretty good job replacing H.
Spencer Knott played really well.
Yeah.
Go watch Spencer Knott on the final play, that third down, that bow conversion to ice it. Perfect split zone. And what he did was he head faked. It was kind of like a really good little basketball move. He kind of head faked the defensive end, thinking the defensive end thought he was about to get blocked by Knott. And whenever he gets blocked by Knott, he thinks automatically it's a handoff. Well, when you head fake him, he starts freezing. Well, I'm going to go seal this guy up at the top of the end. And then this defensive end's like, wait, who's blocking me? Wait, I'm supposed to go get the quarterback. Oh, no, he's already gone. Great. He's done a really good job. That's a walk-on. That's a walk-on making plays like that.
And
another Texan.
Another Texan. Just like Jarrett Stidham. I don't know if you knew he was from Texas.
How about Cam Martin?
Cam Martin. All Baylor backfield. I wish we still had those guys. Guys, the Rugby World Cup, we talked about it before the show. Got to get to that finally. In the first pool, Ireland's leading over Japan. It's 5-5-0-0-0 for Samoa, Russia, and Scotland. Guys, Scotland got smokehoused by Ireland today. That wasn't even close. The U.S. has beaten Scotland in the past, which means that's all you need to know about Scotland in rugby right now. It's not good. Pool B, Italy, New Zealand are at the top of Pool B. But that's only because South Africa hasn't done as well as they should have. So I still think South Africa's my pick out of Pool B. And then New Zealand as well, obviously. The U.S.'s group, England, France, Argentina, U.S., and Tonga. The U.S. is going to struggle to finish dead last in that one. But we'll see. They got England tomorrow, 5:45 a.m. And then rounding out Pool D, Wales, Australia, Uruguay, Fiji, and Georgia. I like Fiji. To be honest, Wales is going to win that. And then Australia will finish second. But look to Fiji try to get third place, Ryan. Fiji's a fun team to watch play rugby. They are extremely gigantic, play hard defense, and are outrageously fast for their size.
Is the Republic of Georgia as boring on offense as the University of Georgia was against Notre Dame?
Even more so, if possible. Georgia against Notre Dame, they're going to do – here's what people are trying to say. Someone in our Slack said that Georgia is recreating 09 Alabama. And – currently, they are in a league where two or three of the teams can beat 09 Alabama fairly easily.
They don't have Julio Jones.
But what I think Georgia is unfortunately doing, and I don't think Kirby realizes it, he is recreating LSU under Les Miles.
I said this today on our show. Like, he's got to have that moment where you're like, oh, wait, you got to have a modern offense to work. LSU's finally done it, we think. And Alabama had to have it. He had to learn the hard way. And Nick Saban had to learn the hard way. And to his credit, he did. And he evolved. I don't think you can make it in the East because Florida ain't there yet, and no one else is even close.
Right.
But yeah, you can't do that if you want to consistently be.
I'm not worried about Georgia right now, which is really weird.
So Georgia needs to go hire Lane Kiffin as the offensive coordinator in the offseason is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
That'd be fun.
They need to hire him as the head coach.
You know how great he'd look in a Georgia visor? He fits that vibe.
He does have
if I can't get Ole Miss head coach Lane Kiffin, which is what I'm really, really pushing for.
Right.
But I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think we need to have the Georgia offensive coordinator.
He would do so well in Athens.
I wish that Ole Miss would hire that the guy who's currently the OC at Texas Tech, who was at Utah State, that has the long shoulder length blonde hair. They should hire that guy.
Yeah.
He's the best.
But yeah, Georgia's got to figure that out because at this point, like, I don't think that offense unless they start catching fire, that's not anything that's going to scare Auburn later in the year. Now, can Auburn's offense move the ball against Georgia's defense by then? We'll see. But if you want to come up with the prophecy together, I mean, there's a good chance Auburn could be undefeated heading into Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Lose that game in Baton Rouge because you have to lose at LSU to have a good season at Auburn.
It's true.
You have to lose at LSU to have a good season at Auburn.
Yes.
That's true.
And then you get Georgia and Alabama at home, and you know, see where the chips fall there.
I've been on record of saying that there's a good chance we could have a three-way one-loss tie in the West, Auburn, Bama, and LSU. We lose to LSU, LSU loses to Bama, Bama loses to Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, Auburn wins the West. Because the tiebreaker goes down to who has the best East record.
It would be us.
Do
you guys realize that William Jefferson Clinton was president the last time that Auburn beat LSU in Baton Rouge?
Exactly, so we can lose that.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. And even before LSU put out this just murderous offense with Joe Burrow
at
quarterback. Joe Brady's really good at his job, is what we're learning. But even before then, I was just like, heading into the year, like, hey, what do you think? I said Auburn's going to lose that LSU. That's the only thing I'm confident in. It's the only thing I'm super confident in. And I feel like they'll probably lose to Alabama, but, you know, you feel like LSU's got it.
My thought is if Auburn gets to the Alabama game with sitting at 10-1, Auburn wins that game 10 times out of 10.
Saban has a hard time beating good Auburn teams.
So
Alabama has a hard time beating good Auburn teams.
Let's end the podcast looking ahead at this coming
probably talking about Mississippi State a little bit.
So quickly, at SP Plus, they're 14th overall, 17th offense, 32nd on defense. They were number one on offense after the first 2 weeks, but then
Tommy Stevens got hurt. I mean, they had played some really bad teams.
Yeah,
and I know SP is his opponent adjusted,
right?
But also they had just performed to do a lot of preseason game stuff.
Yeah, right. And they're not confident in their team as a fan.
No.
Base.
No, and they saw their backup quarterback getting knocked in the air like he was in John Woo. And
right.
Like, they still don't think this guy – I mean, you lose to Kansas State, that'll change some things. But
he looked like he was a John Wick movie.
It was insane what they got. I don't know how to feel about State this year. I feel
– The defense has struggled. And it was the best in America last year.
Kansas State kind of mashed them up front, which Kansas State will do that to you if you're not ready, but – You're an SEC team. You should be playing better up front than that. Can they pass the ball? You're the Mississippi State expert here, right?
Yeah.
Can they both throw the ball effectively? Because I think if you want to come in and say we're going to run it this year, that's a tough task against Auburn because right now they are playing one of the best run defenses in America.
Thomas Stevens was throwing the ball pretty well. Gary Schrader, who's their quarterback now, has not done that much. He's run the ball well. He's got 200 yards on the ground.
He's 28 for 45, Schrader is, for 302 yards. Ryan, you and I have as many touchdown passes as he has.
Against Kansas State and Kentucky.
Yeah.
So not stouch defenses. Staunch defense as well.
But he ran the ball 30 times for 223 yards.
So it's just like Mississippi State almost always is. A lot of that was the Mullen influence.
Yeah.
But is a guy that can run the ball. Kylan Hill, their main running back, is just the focus of the offense. He's got 91 carries already. He's like over 500 yards. Their backup running back's got, I think, 10 carries.
Wow.
And you complain about Gus not rotating his running
back. Yeah, that was a joke. 91 carries in four games.
You always have to worry about maybe one or two Mississippi State receivers, though. And I feel like those guys have kind of started to phase out. Like, there was that run there for a while where it was like you knew that one Mississippi State receiver.
It was like 6'9".
Yeah. He's going to be 6'9", 230, and somehow he's from Alabama, and neither Auburn or Alabama offered him. Like,
he's chip on his shoulder.
Their best receiver, and I'm blanking on his name now, but he is 6'5", 220.
You always have those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They just get raw, really big dudes.
Yeah.
And to their credit, they'll put together some pretty good offenses with them.
Right.
Defensively, though, it looks like they're really missing.
Yeah, I mean, they put, what, three first-round picks in the draft last year? I mean, you're going to miss that talent when you're Mississippi State. You're not recruiting at a top-five level.
Sweat was playing good on Monday Night Football before he came up here.
It was probably their best defense they've ever had at Mississippi State.
That's why so many people were mad about Dan Mullen leaving. You know, they say that, you know, we were ready for him to leave. But no, that was the best team talent-wise you ever had.
Yeah,
that's one of the best defenses in the country, and if Mullen is there, that offense works.
Right.
And
Even though you don't have a Dak,
right,
you're right up there, though.
I mean, the best quarterback in the National Football League, Dakota Prescott. last thing, let's predict this game, and then we'll get out of here. Ryan. The line was 10 Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's, I think it's fluctuated between 9 and 10 for the
most part.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little more confident than that. You know, these Mississippi State games are hard to read sometimes.
Auburn's 4-0 and 4-0 against the spread.
Yeah. Great teams cover.
Yeah.
If I'm just going to throw a number out there, give me 35-20.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I hate doing score predictions because I'm horrible at them. But
35-20, okay.
Because I could see Auburn clicking a little bit better on offense, being at home. I think their defense is going to give them some trouble. I feel like this could be like a 28-17, 31-17 kind of game. Auburn's defense is on a mission right now. They're playing great against the run. And knowing Kevin Steele and knowing the way those guys are, they went all day yesterday in the film session saying this, and this in the fourth quarter was wrong. You got to get better at that. They're going to have a chip on the shoulder. Night game at Auburn. Good luck to the new quarterback because, right. I don't know, man. Like, I've said it before, Kyle Field's an interesting spot because it's so big, but it's not quite as loud as I thought it would be. It's giant, and I didn't think Nick's was going to get rattled either way, but I think just Auburn just brings more volume per person than other places in the SEC. I think it's them with Florida and LSU.
I kind of got made fun of when I said this before, but earlier in the summer we talked about the loudest games at Jordan Hare that we can remember.
Mm.
And one of the ones on my list was the last time Mississippi State was in Auburn in 2017.
Mm.
And it wasn't necessarily the full game, but that was one of the few times you can point and say, oh, the crowd noise affected that game. There were so many false starts and delay of games, and you could tell Mississippi State could not communicate on offense.
2016 LSU was like that as well, you know, where it looked like, what was the dude's name? If he's making his first start. Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Harris, who ended up going to North Carolina. It was just like he just didn't want to play football anymore by the end of that.
All right, so I'm picking this. Tigers are 6-0 against the spread in the last six home games, Ryan. Bulldogs are 0-4. The last four road games against the spread versus a team with a winning record.
Have they gone away from Startwell yet?
I believe this is their first game. Well, I take it back. The opener was in New Orleans.
That's right.
They played Lafayette in the Superdome.
And Covers.com has this as an 11-point spread.
Yeah, it's going to rise, I think.
So I'm thinking Auburn by 14, and I'm going to say give me Auburn 35.
Yeah. 21?
Yeah.
21? I can say that.
Give me Auburn 35.
The price is right to me?
No.
Did you get 34-20?
I'm just not that good at math.
36-22. All right, final
36-22,
answer.
Final answer. No, I think Auburn by 14 is my...
I can say that.
My real thing.
I can say that. I just think this defense is... The offense still not quite there yet, but the defense...
To be 100% honest, 21's tough to me. I have a hard time thinking anybody's getting three scoring drives put together against Auburn right now. Yeah, unless you're A&M. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think there's probably three or four teams that I can look at in the SEC and go, yeah, I bet they could straight.
This also feels like a game that if Auburn gets up to 14-0 like they did against Texas A&M,
there could be some quit.
Yeah, it could be like, you know, past games where Auburn's kind
of fun thing for us to pick will be who's the SEC defensive lineman of the week this week?
Yeah, I think that's going to be super fun.
Whose turn is it?
Yeah.
Feels like an interior guy again with the amount of running they're going to do.
Let's get Truesdale one.
Yeah.
I hope Auburn runs it every week like Luka did with with rookies of the month.
Yeah, Trey Young's better.
Sure he is. All right, that's it for us. And like I say every week,
who knows?
1, 2, 3. Knicks is unbelievable.